Both sermons, as I mentioned, are going to be related to the trial that I was a part of. And as I sat and listened to some of the people, in fact, about 40 people, be possibly selected for jury duty, they sent home 10. There were about 50 that we started with. It was interesting to hear the people ask the question, why do you want to serve? People gave different answers to that question. There was one fellow who was about 70. I think he said he was 71. He didn't say bucket list, but that was essentially his answer. I've always wanted to do this. I'm 71 years of age, and this is on my bucket list to serve on a jury. He didn't get picked. Then there was another fellow. He was probably in his early 20s or so. He gave that same answer. I've always wanted to do this. This sounds fun. It sounds exciting. And some of his answers were contradictory. He also didn't get picked. But the lawyers tried to, I think, emphasize, and even the judge as well, that we do have certain civic duties. We do have certain responsibilities. And that is kind of where we want to head as far as today's class. We want to think about some of the duties that we have towards fellow human beings, fellow man. So the law says that, at least in this country, we have a responsibility. There's a civic duty to sometimes judge other people. And we have an entire court system that's based on that. What else when you start thinking about civic duties? I mean, the duty is a pretty important word. Fellow men, what do we have as far as duties towards other people?
To obey the laws, like speed limits.
All right.
Traffic.
Kind of keeps us in the legal realm, but we want to be obedient. Not only in the legal realm, but what about in the realm of work? I mean, sure. So legal, work. Anything else when we think about duties? That's a really important word. We don't talk about duties a lot of times.
I think kindness and love.
Sure. When we start thinking about this from a Christian perspective, there are certainly some responsibilities that we have. Two of those would be kindness. Another might be summed up with love. What else? All right. Help with needs.
You should be good neighbors.
All right. I think that's another one. We all have probably some bad neighbor stories about people who are not so cooperative or not so neighborly, so we want to be a good neighbor. Anything else? Okay, so have a good understanding of our culture. Anything else come to mind? A duty that we have.
To our families.
All right.
Care for them, however that might be.
Anything else spring to mind?
Well, the neighbor, there's doing to others.
All right. I think that's probably going to be the way that we can sum all that up. We want to make sure that we follow the golden rule. That's not just good policy. That is a divine responsibility. When you think about the duties towards all men, to go back to Ray's point as far as loving all men, the kindness and love in Romans chapter 13, verses 8 through 10, you remember the context where Paul says, owe no man anything, but to what? To love one another. That is that golden chain that kind of binds. And then we have over there, Romans, we'll just jot a few of these down if you want to take some notes, Romans 13, verses 8 to 10. And then we have that passage in Galatians chapter 6 and verse 10, which is also familiar to a lot of people. So then, as we have what? As we have
opportunity.
Let us do that which is good to all men, and especially to those who are of the household of faith, so those who are Christians. So when you think about that duty, you not only say, well, we have all these responsibilities, but based on Galatians 6:10, as we have... How often do you think opportunity strikes? Often. I mean, it may not be every day, but it's going to occur on a fairly regular basis. Then as you think about this, as far as duties to all people, this isn't one that we necessarily mention, but Jesus, in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 5, verses 14 through 16. Those verses ring a bell with anybody? He said, you are the
salt of the
earth. Okay, salt of the earth, and then he gives a second illustration as well. You are also the light of the world. So that's going to be your duty, your responsibility. People need to be pointed to a certain direction, a certain person, and you need to do that too. Let's take a look at the Good Samaritan story. Luke chapter 10, verses 25 to 37. Anybody want to be a reader for that? Bonnie? All right, let's go back to that 10th chapter of Luke. Start with verse 25 and read down through verse 37. Okay, so we have mercy, we have compassion. Those are two items that fit in well with what we have on the board, but we've not yet looked at them. And then as Bonnie read through those details, when we think about our duty to fellow men, if we have the ability to offer some medical treatment, is that a good thing to do? Sure. You know, I keep a medical kit in both vehicles. You know, you never know when, I mean, it may be somebody that we know, it may be somebody that we don't know, but sometimes we can offer some basic medical aid. What about transportation when we think about being helpful to all people? Should transportation be on our list? Sure. I mean, that's an easy way to help people. We also have lodging. Now, you sort of see an escalation here as you continue through Luke chapter 10 as far as what this fellow did, but might there be some times where we help people with lodging? Duty to all men. Sure. And then you have the other thing. What about short-term care? That's going to be probably even more expensive than everything that we have as far as the other items that we mentioned in Luke chapter 10, but even lodging to the point where you're getting some short-term care. Might that also be something that we try to help with? Yes. And it may be that we need to, you know, combine some efforts, and maybe a couple Christians go in together to assist with that, but still, that is a great responsibility. Now, most of these things, as you look at them, would you say that they're positive or negative? We want to be obedient. We want to have kindness and love and the compassion and the mercy and help people with their needs, and we want to be a good neighbor, and we want to have a good understanding of our culture so we can act correctly, and we want to care for our families, and we want to have the golden rule. Mainly negative or mainly positive? All right, they're all positive. But oftentimes, as we start thinking about duties or responsibilities, we can look at them in two different ways. We can say these are the positive things that we need to do, but also you can prove or establish things from a negative perspective. So let's get out our eraser. Clear off about half the board. And as we start thinking about our responsibilities to fellow human beings, now from a negative perspective, what would we say? Well, let's start with Luke chapter 10. From a negative perspective, what could we conclude from what Bonnie read?
Well, some people just walked by and
sure.
didn't pay no attention to them.
All right. Don't ignore.
We have responsibilities when we see things like this.
Yeah. Now, we might not be able to help, but in our day and time, there are cell phones and other tools that we can use to say, at least I can contact somebody for you. I can call the police, make a call to 911, or I can have somebody come out. And, you know, we can at least head some help in your direction. What else when we think about duties to fellow people negatively? Don't do what?
Don't cause any more harm.
Yeah. Somebody's already having a bad day, and what's one of the expressions that we use? It was a terrible day for me, and people did what to me? They just... I think somebody got it. Well, okay, that would be one, but that wasn't quite the one that I was thinking of. What else did they do? All right, they kicked us when we were down. They kept piling it on, and it just got worse and worse. What else when we think about being a good neighbor and helping people from a negative perspective?
I've seen on the news recently where when somebody is down, whatever, an accident, what they steal from.
Okay, yeah, that's another one. I mean, you know, we're not only going to do more harm, but we're actually going to engage in theft. And that happens. Guy loses his house, you know, maybe because of a tornado, and people decide, looters decide that they're going to come in, and, you know, it's a free-for-all. Well, there's a sofa. Let's take that, and the TV looks like it's in pretty good shape. Let's walk off with that as well. And that's certainly not being a good neighbor. That's not doing. That's not being the light of the world and the salt of the earth. Anything else when you think about this negatively? Stan?
This is maybe a little more esoteric, but don't insist on your rights.
Okay. I think that's another one that we want to make sure. You know, you have Paul, in fact, when you look at the book of Romans, for example, you might have the right to eat the meat. But Paul said, you don't trample on your brother's rights. You don't wound his conscience. But there are some people who would do that. So if we're going to be good to our neighbors, especially with fellow Christians, don't engage in that kind of activity. Anything else come to mind?
Gestures.
All right, gestures. Sometimes it's, you know, you have people who are maybe especially sensitive for whatever reason, and you make the wrong kind of gesture, it upsets them. Distressing. So... Anything else? All right, let's tie in some other things here. You've got respect for possessions. You ever have something like a couch and somebody ruin it? I mean, they, you know, maybe you bought your new couch and you're thinking, I'd like to, you know, have my couch maintained for a good number of years. And boy, somebody decides they're just going to come over and just start plopping on the couch. I mean, they're just going to use the full weight. Or they decide that they're going to let their kids run up and down the couch and just, you know, stretch the old cushions just as much as they possibly can. Or you have something else and, you know, they you know, allow their kids to take a hammer and start beating on it. That happens. That happens a lot. And yet, if you do what we talk about, duties to fellow men, now, you may have some people who think, well, that's the way the kids act in our house. So when they go over to your house, they're just acting in the same way. Well, maybe that's true as far as how they act in your house. But should the standard be, this is how they act in our house, so this is how they should act in your house?
No.
No. The standard should be what?
Respect
of the people's property. Now, they may not care. Maybe they want their cushions to be stamped. Maybe they want their walls to be whacked with a hammer. But do you think that they can let you know that? They can. And if they say that's how we want your kids to act in our house, then okay, that's one thing. But make sure that you have that permission before kids start behaving in that way.
I was going to say you also have the duty to point out very obvious sins. I mean, we're supposed to try to correct or at least advise them.
I'm just going to shut you down because that's my next point. Anybody else want to comment before we come back to Carol Sott? That it? All right. Let's go back to our board. And I'll kind of put this one in the middle because it involves both. Speak something in love. Speak the, anybody remember? The truth. And that's what Paul talks about in Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 25. If we want to fulfill our duty to fellow men, do you think that we need to speak? Yeah. And we need to be willing to speak the truth. Now, when you speak the truth, can you speak the truth in a bad way? Sure. What would some of those ways be? It might be the tone. Going back to the gestures. you might speak the truth, but you know, if you are doing this number, it's probably not being spoken in a lot of love. What else? Do you think speaking the truth necessarily involves a lot of words? Let's go back to the couch illustration. Do you think that the person who has kids jumping on your new couch needs to receive a 45-minute lecture?
No.
Now, maybe you feel that way. Especially if this is the first new couch that you've had in your lifetime. But you might be able to get by with saying what?
Please.
Yeah, I would prefer that they play outside. I would prefer that they not jump on the couch. Okay, you've expressed your point, and hopefully that will take care of that. But speak the truth in love. That's the duty that we have towards fellow men. And yet, when we think sometimes about the duties towards fellow men, when it comes to speech, what kinds of problems do we sometimes have? Speech that falls into the...
Well, we either don't say anything until we're so mad it bursts out.
All right, and that's a problem for us. You know, ideally the other person would have figured it out, but they haven't. So we should have spoken the truth in love, but we kept our mouths shut and we added to the problem. Oh, okay. Okay, I didn't mean to shut you off, but that's exactly right. So sometimes we advance the issue. What else?
We can do it in anger at times, and that's not very good.
Okay. Yeah, sometimes that breathing needs to be practiced a little bit, and people sort of take a couple breaths and step back a little bit so they're not angry. What else? Bitterness? Maybe hate?
Sarcasm.
Speech can take a lot of forms that are not positive, so we have that as well. Now, here's another one. Let's go back and take a look at Psalm 101, verse 5. Psalm 101, verse 5. Somebody have that passage and want to read that verse 4, Psalm 101, verse 5. All right, Jeff.
Whoso privily slandereth his neighbor, him I will cut off. In the half that I look and a proud heart will I not suffer.
Okay, God said it's possible to do what to our neighbor? Possible to slander our neighbor. When you think about neighbors, would you say that we have a responsibility towards them? Didn't we have them somewhere over here? Right there. Be a good neighbor. Now, when we think about being a good neighbor, slander may not be, avoiding slander may not be the first thing that comes to our mind, but would you say that that would be part of being a good neighbor? Yeah. If you go back to the couch illustration, your new couch, kids came over, they really trashed the cushions, and maybe they broke them down to the point where they're never going to be the same again. I mean, now your new couch looks like it's 20 years old and about ready for the dump. Human nature might tempt you to do what? Out talking to the neighbor the next day, maybe later that day, what might you be tempted to do? Man, we had some church kids come over today, and what'd they do? Let me show you what they did to the couch. Well, you might be angry, you might be upset, and there is probably some justification for how you feel. I mean, you had some property that definitely was damaged. But yet, you have this passage which says, as we think about duties to all men, you want to avoid slandering your neighbor. If you slander the neighbor, what's that not going to change? I mean, your couch is still going to be messed up, right? If they back into your car, you might be unhappy. The damage is still going to be there. You can't change what has happened.
Oftentimes when a situation like that evolves, and especially if we're telling somebody, we start to embellish it, and then it goes beyond. You might have truthfully said that the child wrecked your couch, but that can very easily turn into, do you know what that family did? They tore up our house.
Yeah.
And that's slandering people who weren't even involved.
Yeah, that's not true. They didn't tear up the whole house. These are the worst kids I've ever seen. You might feel like that way at the time, but that's probably not true. So again, you have some additional problems there. Right.
We should be talking to.
And that's why I'm thinking maybe a neighbor, you know, that you're out talking to, you see later in the day, or somebody else, it's not that specific family. That would also violate that principle that Jesus talked about. If you have a problem with a brother, Matthew chapter 18, go solve it with him, her, or them. Trace?
You have to be careful, too. In that situation, you're slandering the church also because they're members of the church. I mean, I have to be real careful when I'm talking to my mom about things that are going on.
Yeah. there can be some extra consequences there that are serious. All right, let's take a look. Anybody want to say anything else before we look at James 5? Bonnie?
Is slander not lying about something? Well, is slander just talking about something?
Who wants to take that one? What's slander?
I thought slander was when you told an untruth about something. That's what I thought.
Okay. Okay. Anybody else want to contribute there? Anybody ever think that they've been slandered?
I think you can tell the truth about somebody, but it's really not the appropriate time to do it or the appropriate place. You just first start with talking to the people themselves. But yeah, you can tell the truth and slander somebody. I think we see that on politics quite often.
I'm going to give you an advance. I shouldn't do this, but in case you're not here tonight, I'm going to give you an advanced item from the sermon. When the prosecutor was making his final argument, he referred to the defendant as Mr. Marijuana. Now, the defense counsel objected to that, objected strenuously, because this fellow wasn't charged with marijuana. The defendant and the victim had both admitted to smoking marijuana on at least one occasion. And the defendant was riding in a car at times with a person who had smoked marijuana, but he denied being an active, really active user of marijuana. But anyway, the prosecutor said, well, Mr. Marijuana. Now, had the guy ever smoked marijuana? Yes. Was he a big marijuana smoker? No. So he throws that out as a way of saying, hey, this guy is really not a nice guy. That had no relevance to the case whatsoever. But it was a way of slandering him. It was a way of saying, you know, you're a bad guy, you're an evil guy, you're an awful guy, and when the jury goes back, you better find this guy guilty because he's a real creep. So slander could be a lie, but as Ray said, I think you have to look at slander from another perspective as well, and that is you have something that is not favorable, and you're trying to use that to say something evil about another person. Jeff, and then Steve.
The action or crime.
Yeah, and like I say, it could be that false statement, or in this case, it's just damaging to the person's reputation, which in the circumstance I just described was going to be that jury circumstance. But yes. Steve?
In the courtroom, I think they'd call that oral defamation of character. So that's what the prosecution or the defense would, that's their argument, and say, hey, you said something false about my, you know, client.
Yes. And it is defamation, and it is certainly oral in nature. So very good. All right, let's take a look at some other things. Let's remember in James chapter 2, we'll not look at this, but in James chapter 2, verses 1 through 9, something else that comes up. James talks about an assembly, and he says two guys come in. One of the guys is seated up in front. Why? Hey, we've got this nice spot. Come sit right here. Why does he get the good chair?
He looks good.
He looks good, and how much money does he have? He's rich. So you're going to be treated well. When it comes potluck time, you're going to be right at the front. Another guy comes in, and what happens to him? Sits somewhere in the back where he can't see you. You smell. Now, he doesn't say that, but you get the impression that things are not very good with him. So when you think about our duties to fellow men, we've not talked about this, but now what we would say, each person deserves
respect.
Well, not only respect, we might say equal treatment. Is that a challenge for us at times?
Yes.
Treat everybody equally? How come?
Personalities.
All right. Sometimes it's personality. You find people, they just don't click for whatever reason. Why else?
If they might be mean to you. They might be mean to you. If they're being mean
sure. There's some past history. And you think, that guy cut me off, or that guy doesn't talk to me, or she's done this or that to me, and there's not equal treatment there because of past history. So that's another great reason.
There's a problem supposedly in the world with profiling, but we all do it. So the person who comes in to the congregation who's covered with tattoos is automatically going to be profiled as someone you want to keep their eye on, and that may not be true at all.
Yeah, sometimes it's physical appearance. A guy comes in with, I've actually had somebody in the last year say, look, we had somebody come in with a backpack. Do you think that he's going to blow the place up? I said, well, I don't think so. But in that case, it was what they had with them. In another circumstance, it's going to be maybe the tattoos. Maybe it's going to be some body piercings, some earrings. You would hope this would never be true of Christians, but it could be race. You know, whether it's a Muslim or you have different skin color, whatever that might be, and they say, we're not going to treat that particular person in an equal manner. Maybe it's going to be based on education. You're not of our same social status. A lot of reasons for unequal treatment. But when we think about our duties to fellow men, you know, again, going back in the golden rule, treat all people equally. Anything that you want to say about that before we turn a page? Okay, and thinking about treating people equally, let's think about the lost for a little bit. We'll have to probably erase what we have in the middle here. Let's think about our duties to lost sinners. When you think about the commission, Matthew chapter 28 and Mark chapter 16, Jesus said, where are we to go? Into how much of the world? All the world. Do you think that he meant that literally or think he meant that figuratively? I would understand that literally, and I think that's how you have to understand that. If you're going to go into all the world, what are you going to find? Yeah, and this goes back to the previous question to some extent. Going back to Jeff's point, do you think that you're going to find some people who have been mean to you? You think you're going to find some people who have been hateful to you? Think that you might find somebody who has treated you in such a way where they wanted to take your life? So if you had one of those people who wanted to kill you, maybe had made a death threat against you, would you still have, as far as the duty to fellow men, an obligation, if that could be fulfilled, to teach him, her, or them the gospel?
I think you have to be careful.
Yes, that's not saying I'm going to come right over to your house for a Bible study. But, for example, you might send one in the mail. If there was something that you could do to teach them, we would still have that duty. When we think about the lost sinners as well, do you recall what Peter said in 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 15? What did he say about an answer there? Be how often ready to give an answer for the hope that lies within you? Be always ready. So when we think about our duty, our responsibility to fellow men, we have to have that responsibility that we're going to be ready. Now that doesn't necessarily mean, well, let me rephrase the question. Does that mean that we're always going to have every right answer just like that? No. But it does mean that we need to be ready to go out and work with people and get the answers that we need. And those answers are generally not too far from us. Let's take a look at Titus chapter 3 and verse 9. This relates a little bit to our Wednesday class as far as muscle and a shovel. Titus chapter 3 and verse 9. Let's see what we've got there. We'll also have somebody head over to Matthew chapter 7 and verse 6 because that's sort of a parallel text. Matthew 7, 6. Somebody want to get that as well? All right, Tina, Matthew 7, 6, and who wants to be our Titus 3, 9 reader? Bonnie, okay. Let's start with Titus 3, 9.
But avoid foolish questions and genealogies and contention and strivings about the law, for they are unprofitable and vain.
Okay, before I say anything about that, Tina, let's hit Matthew 7, 6 as well.
Do not give what is holy to the dogs, nor cast your pearls before swine, lest they trample them under their feet and turn and tear you into pieces.
Thank you. Now, as we think about our duties, our responsibilities to other people, we have 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 15. That duty to communicate to people if they're somewhat interested in hearing, willing to hear the gospel. But now we find from Matthew 7, 6 and Titus chapter 3 and verse 9 that when it comes to duties, back over here in our negative category, are there also some times where we have a duty to step back and not say anything? Get quiet. Yes. What would you say some of those circumstances would be? All right, there are going to be some times where we're not going to advance the cause of Christ. We're going to make things worse. Common sense, Matthew 7, 6, you're casting your pearls before swine, withdraw. Maybe another time we'll change circumstances and we can maybe be involved then or somebody else could. But yes, that's one. What else? Times where we have a duty to our fellow men to withdraw. Could you explain that a little bit more?
Well, I mean, if somebody's living in sin, I mean, we're all sinners. Do you mean way over the top? Maybe the others have talked to him? Is that what you're getting at? Or am I on the wrong track?
I'm not quite seeing the light at the end of the tunnel with that, Jeff. A time where we have this duty to teach people. And in spite of that duty, there are circumstances which are in accordance with Scripture where we stop trying to teach, or we refuse to answer the questions. Times where we're casting our pearls before swine, Matthew 7:6, or we've got the kind of question that's being described in Titus chapter 3 and verse 9. Could be either way.
If they're so closed-minded.
All right. That would again take us back, I think, to Matthew 7 and verse 6. Here's the person, you talk and talk and talk and talk. Didn't Jesus finally give up on some people? Yeah. I mean, you think about Matthew chapter 23, where he talks about the scribes, Pharisees, hypocrites. He basically said, you're blind. Your ears are plugged up. And you can't hear. And your blood, at the end of Matthew 23, he said, you know, I would have been like a hen that gathers her chicks. And you would not. Therefore, he says at the end of that chapter, your city is left unto you. Remember that word? Desolate. That sure sounds like he was finally saying enough is enough. And he did that. So we certainly might have some people who would put us into that same boat. Anybody else?
When they start using you.
All right. That would be another case. Now you're casting your pearls before swine. Because here's a person, they're not really interested in learning. They don't really, quote unquote, need help. They are a user. And they are just trying to sponge off you as an individual Christian, or maybe the congregation where you are, and you are seen as an ATM machine. That happens. And there have been people who have just fed cash to certain individuals year after year after year, thinking that they were doing the work of God, and that stretches credibility after a period of time.
The Greeks did that. They were people who prided themselves on their philosophy and their education, et cetera, et cetera. And they, I think it's even stated that they wanted to hear Paul because it was a new thing. It wasn't that they were interested in the religion. They were interested in something new that they could grasp and use to influence or make themselves look good in front of other people.
Yeah. A couple weeks ago when I went through the 20 ideas that people use to supposedly refute Christianity, remember some of the questions that I threw out? Are there space aliens? Did Jesus die for the space aliens? Does the man on Mars have to be baptized? I will have some patience for people if they want to ask those kinds of questions. Can God make a rock so flat or a piece of paper so flat that it has only one side? If you want to ask those questions, I will show you why those are not logical questions. But if a person wants to persist with that kind of thing, and it's just time after time after time after time, then enough is enough. Now, that's not what we see with Muscle and a Shovel. There you find a fellow who had a lot of questions, and he was willing to consider those questions. It took him a little while to sort of sort out the answers, and that was perfectly fine, and no problem doing that today. But if you're just there to constantly pick and fuss and make jokes about it, then okay, we're done. Let's think about moving on a little bit. Duties to enemies. I think we have some responsibilities to enemies. We do. And as you think about some of those responsibilities, Paul in Romans chapter 12 talks about some of those things that we need to do. If your enemy is hungry, feed him. If your enemy is thirsty, give him something to drink. If your enemy is naked, clothe him. And if you can heap coals of fire on his head, do what? Do it. Now, what do you think those coals of fire are? Think you just want to really turn up the heat so he's going to roast a lot? More in hell? No. You kill him with kindness. I don't know if that's where that expression came from. But when we think about our enemies, what are some of the ways that we can do good to our enemies, the people who oppose us? Could even be a Christian.
Pray for them.
All right. I think they may not know that, but that would certainly be a starting point. We can pray for them. What else? Yeah, we've done that. We've done that. With a lot of persuasion.
Yes.
I could say more about that, but we should have brought two vehicles. I'm going to go down that road. So I'm just going to leave that one there. But yes, you may have to work on that a lot, but it can be done. What else? Ray?
You find some good things about them. You talk about those and encourage them with those. But do that maybe before you approach some of all the bad things.
Okay, there's that. Remember what Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount and then Paul too in Romans chapter 12 and verse 14. Bless them that do what? Bless them that persecute you. How could you bless a persecutor? Okay, let's be a little more specific. I think a general answer, that's good, be nice to them. How would you do that?
You can pray for them.
Well, again, yeah, we've got that on the table. But something that they're going to know about. Okay, again, that's a good general answer, but how do we do that specifically? I think that would be a great example, and maybe they are in the habit of doing that. Now, if you go over and knock on the door and say, well, hey, he threw trash over there, and I was a real nice guy, and I picked it up, I'm a Christian, that's probably not going to not work very well. But you're exactly right. You take care of it. What about dog droppings? But if you know that you have a neighbor who is intentionally bringing their dog over to find relief on your property because they don't like you, then again, that would be one way possibly to go ahead and deal with that. What if you, for example, if it's a woman, and they seem to be maybe a little more prone to accept compliments as far as clothing than a male, but you have a coworker that, or somebody in the neighborhood, and you see them out and about, and you say, you sure look nice today. Could you do that? Think that might be one way of heaping coals of fire in the person's head? Now, the reaction you get may not be positive. What might somebody say if you tried to compliment their clothing? Probably not get a good response. And maybe after a while they just become silent. But every piece of good. Anybody remember the old story about marriage? It's been something that preachers have used to illustrate marriage. It goes along something like this. You imagine a bank. And your bank is full of money. You get married. And everything negative that happens in the marriage, you know, there's an angry word or, you know, you forget to do something. Every time something bad happens, you've got a coin taken out of your bank. And if you have a marriage where you have coins continuously taken out of the bank, but nothing is going back into the bank, common sense tells you what? After a period of time, you're going to have a bank that is empty. So the lesson from that is, if you're in a marriage, everybody has a bank, and everybody's going to have some withdrawals. But if your deposits don't at least equal, and ideally, probably necessarily, exceed the withdrawals, likely what's going to happen to your marriage? It's going to dissolve, or it's going to be a very unhappy relationship. So there's this constant cycle, or an ongoing cycle. It may not be constant, but you need to make sure that you do that. And if you take that and you put that into what we're talking about today as far as doing good to enemies, you can do the same thing, can't you? You can continuously make withdrawals in the sense that you're agitating that enemy, and things are never going to get better. But if you have some withdrawals, maybe that's because of what you're doing, maybe not. But if you have some withdrawals and you're putting more and more in, ideally that will keep the coals of fire, and that person will perhaps be won, if not for Christ, won over to your side as being a friendly person at some point in the future.
I have heard or read several different people writing, and they say for every negative that you say to a person, it takes between 14 and 16 positive comments to make it even. So
yeah. It's not exactly a one. It's not exactly a one for one ratio. So ideally, you're putting a lot more in the bank than.
And you know, out of a group of people, if one person does something, you label the whole group the same way. Mm-hmm. So that just proves that there's right.
Yes, exactly right. Thinking about our enemies and thinking about the responsibilities that we have towards them. Remember this too from Romans chapter 12 and verse 19. Paul said, "Avenge not yourselves, beloved, but give place unto what? The wrath of God. So if we can't, with our little bank, make things up, or better, with our enemies, then we have a responsibility to look at that person and say, well, okay, what's going to happen to you? God will take care of you. Then one other, Matthew chapter 5 and verse 38. Jesus said, if he hits you on this cheek, give him what? Give him the other. So when we think about the responsibilities that we have towards our fellow men, sometimes we're going to accept things that we may not like. Let's take a quick look at helping our fellow men in the sense of Christians. That's probably going to be, with the time that we have left, a good responsibility. What should be some of the things that we want when we think about dealing with fellow saints? Good, clear communication that comes out earlier rather than later. And certainly we avoid the slander that we talked about with Bonnie. So those would be good answers. The love, the kindness, the compassion that Ray brought out and a couple others did. Anything else? In Romans 12 and verse 10, and this is not the only place that we find it, Paul said, treating each other with honor and even preferring one another. How can we do that to a fellow Christian? We're going to prefer you above me. We're going to, you know, let you do this instead of us. Don?
Didn't Jesus use very frank language with his enemies? He didn't beat around the bush.
I would say he was pretty clear.
So should we follow that example?
Are we moving back to the enemy category?
Well, in general, so you're equal and treat everybody else as you want to be treated and stuff like that.
Yeah, if you don't have clear communication, most people are not mind readers. So whether it's just maybe a verbal cue, you know, somebody's poking their finger at you or something, without some kind of oral communication or maybe written communication, some things that might be really clear in your mind, and maybe you're even with a husband and wife. The wife may turn to the husband and say, well, you know, look, we've been married for 20 years, you should know. Or the husband may look at the wife and say, well, I really thought that you and I were on the same page. And if you have relationships sometimes that are that close and people are not necessarily on the same page for whatever reason, certainly when you look at relationships within the church, you're probably going to find some times where communication is not what it is or not what it should be. So I do think that communication is going to be really an essential part of any relationship. All right, anything else as far as fellow relationships with Christians? Remember from Romans chapter 14 and verse 13, Paul said, do not put a what in your brother's way? Do not put a stumbling block. So that's something else that we want to be very mindful of. And Romans 15 and verse 1, he said, the strong should bear the duty of the strong should bear the burdens of the weak and so forth.